Hey everybody, I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And it's Del Toro time. It's Del Toro time, and it's Thanksgiving Day.
We didn't forget our intro this time.
Thanksgiving Day.
Yep. That's it's not going to be Thanksgiving this. When this is released, though.
I don't know. Maybe I'll just whoop it together. I'm not going to whoop it together. There's no way.
You have two casseroles to make.
I have two casseroles to make. I have to make a tuna casserole, and I have to make a green bean casserole. So
because we're Midwestern.
Mm-hmm. We are midlife crises.
I'm surprised you're not calling it a hot dish.
I don't use that term.
I had never heard that term. Apparently, it's like really common in Minnesota.
Yeah, it's the term in Minnesota.
Never heard it until I read it on the internet.
Everyone says hot dish. Nobody says casserole. If you say casserole, you're an asshole.
My mom has only ever said casserole.
Yeah, well, she's Catholic. Catholics do and casseroles.
She's very Minnesotan, though, as well.
Catherolles. Anyway, it's the last Del Toro, Guillermo del Toro, Cabinet of Curiosities episode.
It is.
And we're going out with a bang.
We are. We're also going out on a high note.
And we're going out with a murmuring. That's right.
A murmuring.
We're going to talk. No Mormons. We're talking about Borbs and Burbs and Essie Davis and Andrew Lincoln, and a man named Mr. Greaves, which is probably the most on-the-nose name in the entire episode.
Yeah, just a little bit.
This is the final episode. It is the one we talked about last episode, directed by Jennifer Kent, the writer and director of The Babadook. This one is written by Jennifer Kent and based on a short story that nobody's ever read by Guillermo del Toro. And this episode felt like a Guillermo del Toro story.
Yep.
Many shades of Devil's Backbone and The Orphanage. But also, B, felt very much like a Jennifer Kent story and could serve very comfortably as a follow-up or companion piece to The Babadook.
Yeah.
Like, visually, emotionally, the way the haunts work, there's just no goblin in a top hat.
No.
No.
Which, you know, kind of disappointing, but I understand.
Right. I mean,
There's no goblins at all in this episode.
Did you? I thought for some reason you said Goblin Zalas, which is like a play on my last name. But
no.
It's not. I could have worn a top hat for you if I'd known it was going to be missing from this one. I could have worn a top hat through the whole episode.
We got some other cool hats, so it's okay.
We did. Oh my gosh, this episode has cool hats, cool outfits, a cool set. This episode felt to me the most like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was like, I'm just watching a short movie as opposed to a very beautiful episode of television.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Is this the only episode without a weird goopy monster?
There's no goopy monster in this. Let me look. I'll go down the list. Goopy monster. Definitely a goopy monster. Goopy person and a monster. Goopy monster. And a monster that was literally goop last time. So I think this is our only episode without any kind of monster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just ghosts, and the ghosts look like people, and only at one point did one of the ghosts have like a scary face.
Yeah.
But otherwise, we are looking at this is a straight up ghost story.
Mm-hmm. A gothic story. This is a gothic story.
Now, I was telling you while we were watching it that I've been reading a book called The Whistling.
Mm-hmm.
That is a gothic ghost story set like in the early 20th century. This is set in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking about like what, and you studied the gothic. You studied gothic horror and gothic novels. And I was thinking about like the way you get trapped in a house in gothic stories. And one of the really common ways is you're a nanny or a caregiver who can't leave the house because there's someone you care for there. Or you've fallen in love with someone and you're obsessed with him so you don't want to leave. But this one pulls the creepy house is on an island and we are just stranded on an island.
Yep. There was a bit of the sort of gothic house trope in this. Although not as much as I like in gothic, with the impossible geometry like of hallways and stuff. That's my favorite part of gothic architecture. We did get some cool hallway shots. We got a lot of cool shots in this episode.
It's a beautifully filmed episode. Mm-hmm. Really black blacks. This episode relies a lot on just pitch blackness.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the design of the house. It had a nice ramshackle feel, but I would like to stay in that house. Like, if it was an Airbnb, I'd like to stay in that house.
We got some fantastic bird action.
Mm-hmm.
What
are the birds called? Like Dunder Mifflins?
They're from The Office. They're called Dunlings.
Dunlins,
yeah.
Yes, yes.
A very specific type of Dunlin.
Birds that I had never heard of. So I actually looked them up. I was like, is this real? Or did Guillermo del Toro make up these borbs? And nope, these burb boys are legit burbs that...
Well, they would have had to spend a lot of money to make that full print book.
Yeah.
about their mating life in Canada, if it were not real.
Now, in his charming introduction, Guillermo del Toro mentions that he loves the word murmuration because it refers to, like, this amazing things that birds do, where they move in these, like, patterns and flocks in the hundreds mm-hmm. to thousands of millions of birds. But he also likes the word because it contains within it the idea of murmuring. And mm-hmm. a murmur is, of course, a voice that you can barely hear, that's saying something you can't make out. And he says that, and of course, you're going to carry that into the episode. This episode is about murmurs, murmuring, murmurations. It's about grief and loss and ghosts and, like, crimes of the past. But it's about all this. It's an hour long, and it never feels like it's trying to stuff too much into the episode.
I want to read his short story.
No one's ever read it. Like, no one knows what this story is.
Because the first episode was based off of one of his short stories as well, right?
That's the difference. The first episode is, I think it said, like, based on a story by Guillermo del Toro. And this one actually says based on a short story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I assumed that, like, the first episode, Lot 36, is based on, like, I came up with a story. Here's my story. And this one was actually, I wrote a short story. Here it is. Like, yeah. I think I came up with the story for this as opposed to I wrote a short story. But
is funny because it feels like it should be reversed because of how much was stuffed into the first one.
Yeah. I mean, the first one was just so vague about things.
Yeah. But it didn't feel like there was any deep lore to this episode that didn't get explored.
No, it was pretty much a short, like a ghost story. Mm-hmm. Like, and you're in a house and you are being haunted and you've got to figure out why they're being haunted and then help the ghost move on to Ghostland.
Yeah, there was another child going to heaven scene in this episode. It was done better, in my opinion.
Wait, when did we have a child going to heaven before?
In the rat face one, human rat face.
Oh, I don't remember anything about that episode.
Yeah, his twin sister.
That's right. Was terrible. God, I totally forgot everything that happened in that episode.
Yeah.
Oh, that was not good. This is a much better story about grief and loss mm-hmm. of a child. So S.E. Davis, the star of The Babadook, as well as like a million other things, the Lambs of God miniseries. She's Miss Fisher in the Miss Fisher murder mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
She was actually played Amelia in... I've never seen this. She played Amelia in the Funny or Die short film... The Babadooks of Hazzard.
I really thought you were going to say she played Amelia in an Amelia Bedelia movie for a second, and I was about to rage quit.
She played Amelia in The Babadooks of Hazzard, which I guess you can watch. It's out there. I've never seen it, but again, The Babadooks of Hazzard. Maybe they just interpolated footage of her in it. I have no idea. In any case.
The Babadook has a lot of films, apparently.
Yeah. Our director also directed How the Duke Stole Christmas and wrote and directed How the Duke Stole Christmas, which is just a 45-second long little flash animation that you could send to someone on Christmas around the time the Babadook came out. Like, but she was credited as having written and directed it, so good for you.
Good job.
Good job, Jennifer Kent. This is the first thing Jennifer Kent has directed, like, since The Nightingale in 2018. So it's been a while. I don't know if she's been doing theater or what, or, you know, what else she's been up to. But yeah, this is her first big thing. And what a comeback.
Yeah.
She has a movie announced, but this is her first thing. So S.E. Davis from The Babadook, it plays Nancy Bradley, and Andrew Lincoln, who plays Rick Grimes in The Walking Dead, mm-hmm. plays Edgar Bradley, her husband. And A, he's almost unrecognizable because he's yep. just allowed to sort of be a doughy guy. Mm-hmm. And B, he's older. And C, he's just playing a very different character. He's very good.
He's very good. I love him very much in this.
Yeah. So this is the story. They're both ornithologists.
Mm-hmm.
She's
Which are
like
bird scientists, for those who don't know.
Yes, yes. People who study birds, not scientists who are birds.
It would have been awesome if they were birds,
This
though.
Is not a Tuca and Birdie spinoff. So they're celebrated scientists. She is the more like accomplished of the two, but he gets all the credit because
he's a man and it's the 50s.
Yeah, and she's a woman and it's just science in general, even if it was 2022.
Yeah.
But he's a cool husband.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not like stealing credit or anything.
No, he's actively trying to give her credit when people are like lauding right. him with praise. He's like, actually, you should do that for my wife because mm-hmm. she's cool.
They are an older couple, like they're in their 50s. Well, older couple. They're in their 50s, but they're both very sexy, just like Ed and Lorraine Warren from the Conjuring movies.
Yes.
Not Ed and Lorraine Warren in real life.
I don't think they're as sexy as Ed and Lorraine Warren, but they're definitely more enjoyable to watch.
They're sexy to me.
Okay. Fair enough, I guess.
So they're ornithologists, and all we know from the beginning is that they've had some kind of tragedy.
I'd like to
past.
Sit down and have a casserole with them.
Yes.
Is the vibe that I got.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not right now because they're going through a lot.
They're going
but
through
But in
it.
The future.
They've had a tragedy in their past. They have been studying these birds called Dunlins who have these amazing murmurations. And they're going off to an island where the Dunlins live in, I think it's like Nova Scotia or Newfoundland. The guy who picks them up has a kind of a Newfie accent. As you said, he sounded Irish. You were like, is this Ireland?
Yeah.
So you were hoping fairies would come into play.
We didn't get any fairies in this show yet, and I'm very upset about
maybe
that.
Maybe next season. Maybe if there's a season
I'm going to call. I'm going to dial in. Guillermo del Toro, where are your fairies?
Where's your fairies? This guy, Mr. Greaves, drives them to the island. Well, takes them on a boat to the island, and they have to stay there for a week before he comes back. They're staying in a house that was built. It's a beautiful two-story house that was built there, all isolated. And all they know is that a woman lived there, presumably with her husband and child, her little boy. But they haven't lived there in decades. No one's lived there in decades. And the place is fully furnished, has a generator, has running water that Mr. Greaves and his wife set all up. It's all clean. And there's photos on the walls of this woman and her husband. And right off the bat, Nancy starts getting haunted by the sounds of crying children and footsteps running in the hall.
The photos are actually very telling at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because there was not a picture of the husband with the rest of the family.
Right.
It was just the single like oval frame of his face and then the larger portrait of the mother and the son.
Yeah. He wasn't even a husband.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
He has the we find out he was just the father of the child.
Yeah, the former lover.
Right, because you find out through a series of letters that Nancy discovers that the guy got this woman pregnant, promised he was going to leave his wife for her, but then he never did, and he kind of just shut her away on this island.
He didn't do that. Her family did
her
that.
Her family did it, right.
Yeah, because they suck.
Yeah. So the big push of this episode is that there's some kind of tragedy that happened in Nancy and Edgar's life. Mm-hmm. You kind of figure it's a child died. Like that's like just the gist. And of course she's at one point she sees a ghost of her baby.
Mm-hmm. First she just starts hearing things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, okay, well I can get into that later. But first she starts hearing things.
Right. They're studying these birds, which means they film them and they record audio of them. Mm-hmm. And she's in charge of the audio, he's in charge of the filming, and she starts hearing in the audio white noise and then a voice saying, I'm so cold, or it's so cold, and mommy's mad at me. Mm-hmm. And she starts hearing a woman's voice saying, what have you done? Like screaming, what have you done?
Yeah.
Yeah. But her husband can't hear it.
No. It's set up pretty quickly, like pretty early on, that she's been having issues sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some confusion around whether or not it's all in her head. But my one question about all of that is the one of the first like haunts is the sound machine getting turned on downstairs.
Right.
That made it pretty clear that something was going on, and it wasn't just in her head because her husband experienced it as well. So the ambiguity wasn't really there for that long.
Right. Yeah. Her tape machine turns on in the middle of the night, starts playing the bird noises. I mean, I guess you can like chalk it up to like maybe it wasn't turned off completely. I don't know, because they did a good job at showing that she was the only one who used that machine.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's some open-endedness there. But I mean, once they show like the letters, the love letters all over the floor that have been like left there by the ghosts, like you can tell that. Okay.
Yeah. There's actual ghost shenanigans going on.
But the ghosts
No
ghost cones. No seances. No. Nothing. The ghosts are focusing entirely on her.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's the only one open to hearing it. And they are a loving couple.
Yeah.
You can tell they love each other very much.
They're obviously going through a really rough patch, as, again, a lot of couples do when they lose a child.
Right.
But there's no, like, hatred or resentment, really, it feels like.
Right. He tries to get physical with, like lovingly physical with her a couple of times, and she rebuffs him repeatedly. It's clear they haven't had any kind of physical intimacy in, like, a year since this happened. Like, I think they said, like, 18 months or something.
Yeah.
Whenever their child died. Also, the attic of the house is an Edward Scissorhands attic. It's exposed to the elements.
Yeah.
And the Dunlins have roosted.
Nested.
Yeah. Up
Which
in the attic.
Out of normal for their behavior. It is a
right.
unique phenomenon.
Yeah. So they're trying to figure out why the Dunlins are mm-hmm. like roosting up there. And also they're down on the island. So they kind of end up splitting up a few times, the husband and wife, because he's down filming the birds on the shore and she's up there trying to figure out what's going on in the attic. She becomes obsessed with the family who used to live in the house. She has visions of like the little bit, her own baby in her bed, but then she has visions of a little boy running through the house. When she's taking a bath, she has a vision of the boy laying in the bathtub. Mm-hmm. She hears him saying it's so cold. This other ghost is pounding on the door. The door opens and this ghost woman comes screaming through, screaming, "What have you done?"
Yeah.
And
full banshee face as well.
Yes. Terrifying little moment. And again, the husband hears none of this. Edgar hears none of it. But
he's wearing those big ass headphones, though.
And he's concerned that she isn't actually processing her grief over the death of their child because she's never cried.
Yeah.
Which is like a big deal.
Not everyone cries when they grieve. You know,
not everyone cries.
But
I think
she's obviously not dealing with it at all.
Yes, there are some. She is very bottled up with her emotions. She's not a cold person.
No.
But when things get intense, she kind of shuts down a little bit. And
a little bit is a bit of an understatement.
They end up having this argument that leads to a monologue by Edgar that had us both in stunned silence.
Yeah, it was so good.
Yes, Andrew Lincoln delivers this monologue about how he's been feeling and how he is so worried about her that is heart-shattering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she confronts Mr. Greaves when he returns. And it's like, who used to live here? What happened to the people who lived here? She's already figured it out.
Yeah. You don't ask those kinds of questions unless you already have an idea of the answer.
Right. The woman who used to live there, Claudette, the father of her child never came to her. She was all alone in this house with her son, and she drowned him in the bathtub.
Yeah.
And then she took her own life.
Mm-hmm.
And Nancy is furious that Mr. Greaves didn't say anything about it.
He's like, look, lady, what is there to say?
Right. He's like, it's been 30 years, and he gets upset because he's like, my wife and I spent all this time nicing this place up for you, and it's a believable scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, she's, yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't want to be, if I was renting out an Airbnb, and I came to deliver some supplies to the people I was renting it to, and they were like, how dare you not tell us the lore of the house, I'd be like, first of all, get out.
He's not even renting it to them.
No, he's
doing
it for free.
They're staying there for free.
Yeah.
It was this unexpected gift. But of course, she's freaked out because there's literally ghosts in the house.
Yeah.
I thought that because we didn't really have the story yet, I thought he was going to end up having been the little boy, even though that doesn't make any sense.
I thought he was going to end up having been the father of the woman.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Or that.
Yeah.
Maybe. We don't know that he wasn't. Is
we
that
don't
implied?
Know that he wasn't.
Is that implied? Is that the implication of that?
It kind of feels like it, because he has ownership of the house.
Okay, is that the point? Did we miss that? That he's the father because he is married, because we knew that the father of the child was married.
Oh, it's no, been... I thought I meant like the father of her, but I guess he wouldn't be old enough for that. So maybe.
No, because it was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
He would have been like 30 or 40, married, have access to the house. He would have reason for not telling anyone about it,
mm-hmm.
for getting upset at her. I think we figured it. I don't think we were supposed to have figured it out because I think we were supposed to be obvious. But I think Mr. Greaves was her lover.
Yeah.
And the father of the boy. Okay, we figured it out. We're very smart.
If we're completely wrong, we might be, but that's our theory.
But if we're completely right, we're sorry it took us so long. We thought the story was awesome anyway.
Yeah.
So she ends up, she ends up getting in a fight with Edgar, and he's down on the shore. She's up in the house. The ghosts show up again, and she finally decides to just talk to the ghost. She's like, she doesn't say this, but it's basically just like, okay, I'm going to stop running. I'm going to follow the boy. I'm going to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
And she does. And she has to tell this little boy.
First, she screams at the lady ghost to leave him alone.
Yes, because the lady ghost is
a very powerful scene.
Right. Yeah. And the boy's crying and saying it's so cold. And she's like, look, you're not alive anymore. Your mother did something very bad to you.
And it's not your fault.
Right. It's not your fault. She's sitting in a pool of sunlight coming through the window. And she tells mm-hmm. the little boy to run into her arms, run into the light. And he does. And he disappears into her arms.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes upstairs where the mother's ghost is. And she sees the mother look at her own hands and say, what have you done? Clearly, the mother wasn't screaming, what have you done at the boy? She was screaming, what have you done at herself?
Mm-hmm.
And then she sees the mother throw herself out of the window of the attic. And then she's crying. And she breaks down. She finally cries about her own child. Dunlins fly away. Because as Guillermo del Toro said in the beginning, birds, like legends also have stories of flocks of birds carrying the souls of the dead mm-hmm. into the afterlife. So you sort of figure out that the Dunlins were there because they couldn't leave until the house was free of the spirits.
And the ending of the episode is them starting to talk again.
Yeah.
And her reconciling, opening up.
Reconciling over their Motorola radio.
Mm-hmm. Which was a really good ending.
The whole episode was this was a very good episode.
Mm-hmm.
A lot has been written about this. And of course, I haven't read any of it because I didn't want spoilers. But if you look this up, there's essays after essays about how this is a great episode. All I knew was like it had to do with grief.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, I mean, I know it's cliche at this point to say like, oh, the horror is actually the grief and the trauma. But this does it really well.
Well, I mean, the horror is always the grief and the trauma. Like that's... I hate that that's considered a cliche, like to be mocked.
And ghost stories in particular are almost always about grief and trauma.
Because ghosts are just our own manifestations of our own feelings. We're just projecting into stories.
And it feels of a piece with the Babadook, because the Babadook, of course, is about grief
mm-hmm.
and about trauma and about parenthood. And this is too, but from a very different perspective.
Yeah.
Even though it's about a woman over the age of 40 feeling grief about things, it has a different feel, but it's very similar also.
Also, just the couple was so cute.
They are so cute together, and their hats.
They had a special like bird call whistle that they did over the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so sweet.
And she wore an awesome hat.
She did, and he wore an awesome hat, and they both had awesome glasses.
Yes, they both wore awesome glasses, awesome hats, awesome jackets. They looked like they stepped out of
They had awesome pajamas too. You can't say those pajamas weren't awesome.
Those were good pajamas. Everything about this episode was good. Everything about this episode was great. The art direction, the costume design by Luis Sequeira, who also did the costumes for The Shape of Water, for Nightmare Alley, for The Strain.
Okay. The Strain had some pretty good costumes,
It does have good costumes. Even the there's very little music in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But what music there was done by Jed Kurtzell, and it was very effective. It was very abstract.
There were some things in this episode that I thought they were setting up to be used as like cheap jump scares that they didn't use, and I'm very happy they didn't.
Yeah, there's a couple of scares that are like a ghost rushing at the screen, but you're expecting mm-hmm. it. Like it's not like supposed to jump out and scare you.
I only got jump scared once during this episode, and that was not when I was supposed to be jump scared.
It was when she turned on a light and you jumped because you were expecting a jump scare.
Yeah, and I heard a light flicker and I got scared.
You also thought they might pull the child was the bad one all along. at the end. They didn't do that.
No, which I was very thankful for, because I really don't like those stories.
It rarely works well, and it does become a bit of a cliche, but they didn't. They avoided that. And it ends with some kind, not like complete resolution, but it comes to a conclusion where you are left with a feeling of hope.
Yeah, and it the ending is a beginning.
Right. These people are probably going to survive. Their relationship is probably going to survive.
Yeah, because they love each other so much.
Yeah, I would give acting awards to both Essie Davis and Andrew Lincoln for this one.
I would give one to Greaves too.
Yeah, you like Mr. Greaves?
I thought he was really good in his scene with her the second one.
Yeah, and I credit that to Jennifer Kent's direction. I think this is a beautifully directed episode. Mr. Greaves, who you might know from such movies as The Black Coat's Daughter, from Christmas Scavenger Hunt, from Christmas with a Prince, from one episode of Degrassi, The Next Generation.
How many actors have we had now that have been in that show?
I don't know. But he's been acting since the mid-80s. I think he's a Canadian actor. I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
Greg Elwand. Good guy.
That's a good last name. You got a good last name, dude.
Yeah, he's the Elder Wand.
He is a Horcrux.
He is a Horcrux. You must smash him with a hammer.
Was the Elder Wand a Horcrux? No.
No, but as far, I don't know. There's a lot going on. It doesn't matter. Who cares? Who cares?
I am not ashamed of getting Harry Potter lore wrong at this point.
And that is The Murmuring by Jennifer Kent from Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities, Episode 8, the final episode.
It's the final episode.
It's the final episode.
I was going to make that joke, and then I decided it would be dumb, but now you've just made the joke, so I guess that's what we're going with.
The final episode.
That was almost as bad as my Monster Mask joke.
You do the mask. You do the monster mask. So we've watched the shows now. All the shows.
All six of them.
All eight of the shows. We have discussed the episodes. Mm-hmm. We have eight episodes. Lot 36, Graveyard Rats, The Autopsy, The Outside, Pickman's Model, Dreams in the Witch House, The Viewing, and The Murmuring.
You do the rats. You do the Graveyard Rats.
Four episodes that are the one word. Four episodes that are not the one word.
Netflix got rid of this show on my screen because we finished watching it, so I'm going to have to find it again.
Lot 36, The Graveyard Rats, The Autopsy, The Outside, Pickman's Model, Dreams in the Witch House, The Viewing, The Murmuring. Willow,
right. Yes.
Do you have a ranking for the eight Cabinet of Curiosities episodes? Which curiosities would you put in which drawer in the cabinet?
Do you want me to start from the top or from the bottom?
Start with your favorite and work your way down.
All right. My favorite was The Murmuring.
Okay.
Then I think it was The Autopsy.
Okay.
Then it was Graveyard Rats.
Okay.
Then it was The Outside.
The Outside.
The Viewing is hard to place because it was really good, but it felt so out of place. Of the show.
Yeah.
And I'm having a hard time comparing it to the others. So that's its own separate category. The Viewing, it exists. And I liked it. Then it was Pickman's Model.
Okay.
Then it was Lot 36. And then it was Dreams in the Witch House.
So you've got, just to read these back,
mm-hmm.
you've got The Murmuring, The Autopsy, Graveyard Rats, The Outside, The Viewing kind of in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Pickman's Model, Lot 36, Dreams in the Witch House.
Yes.
All right. Let's find out how similar. I'm going to put these. I have them written down. I'm just going to.
You're going to compare our lists?
I'm going to compare our lists. So, Murmuring, Autopsy, Graveyard Rats, The Outside, The Viewing, Pickman's Model, Lot 36, Dreams in the Witch House. A solid, solid list.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is very similar in some ways and very different in some others. So, my top two are the same as yours. Murmuring and then The Autopsy. Bickety bam.
Mm-hmm.
My next one is Pickman's Model.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have The Viewing. Then I have Graveyard Rats. Then I have The Outside. So my middle four are the same as yours, but they are
in different order.
In almost the complete opposite order. But
yeah.
I liked Pickman's model a lot more than I liked The Outside.
Yeah.
But I understand why you liked The Outside. Like, yeah, I'm not arguing. This isn't an argument.
Yeah. We can talk about this afterwards, but this continue your list.
Our own personal preferences. And then my bottom two are the exact same as yours. Then Lot 36 and then Dreams in the Witch House.
Yeah.
Dreams in the Witch House was, I hate to use the word garbage, but it was terrible.
It was hot trash.
That was not
sad trash.
That was sad trash. Yes, that's the definition of sad trash.
That was what Dr. Frankenstein's father was referring to. I hate to roast that episode so bad, but the jokes are funny. So
it just didn't work. Nothing in it worked. And Lot 36 was good, but there just wasn't a lot to it.
There was a lot to it that wasn't explored enough.
Yeah. So those are our two rankings. We both have The Murmuring and The Autopsy at the top. We both have Lot 36 and Dreams in the Witch House at the bottom. And you know what? I'm honestly going to say, like, it's a drop off from Lot 36 to Dreams in the Witch House. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a drop off. You liked The Viewing more than I did. I liked The Viewing more than you did, or I thought it felt fit more into the list more than you did.
The Viewing and The Outside are even footing.
Oh, I see.
I had some trouble with the middle ones. I always have trouble with the middle because I liked them all very equally.
Yeah. Yeah. My middle ones are all very close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like Graveyard Rats, I put below Pickman's model and The Viewing, but I like Graveyard Rats a lot. So yeah. It's tight in there. That's a tight four. So your thought overall on the entire series?
I'd watch it again. I will watch it again.
It's good. It's good. Like, it's a good eight episodes, except for the ones that aren't very good.
Which is Lot 36 was the pilot, so.
Yeah. And Dreams in the Witch House. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't think I'd watch Dreams in the Witch House again. It was very long.
I want to rewrite Dreams in the Witch House.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, solid series. I really hope we get a season two.
You know what Dreams in the Witch House had going for it? Ron Weasley.
It did have Ron Weasley. But I hope we get a season two.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this was a good series for letting the directors and the designers and the writers, like, just do what they do best.
Yeah, this was awesome.
Yes, and kudos to you, Guillermo del Toro. Now, speaking of Guillermo del Toro, tomorrow...
What does he like about this show?
No, tomorrow...
Tomorrow, I'm very excited.
You and I, Willow and Phil, are going to go to the theater and we're going to see...
Pinocchio,
the little wooden boy who did good. Can he make it in the big city? I guess we're going to find out.
I'm so excited for this.
Pinocchio, based on the novel Pinocchio by Collodi Guy. Pinocchio. And a book that I give a solid D+ to on every time I try to read it. I can barely make it through the garbled mess that is Pinocchio. Boy, oh boy, does that book really slow down in the middle.
Wasn't it, like, supposed to end and there was so much backlash that it had to keep going?
Yes, he had to do a Conan Doyle and, like, continue the story after he killed off the main character. So, Pinocchio, published as a series of short bits for children in a Italian children's magazine, smooshed together into a semi-coherent tale. Pinocchio, it's not about what you think it's about, because it's a lot longer than you think it is. And Guillermo del Toro's, I believe, has very little to do with it anyway.
It looks fantastic, though.
I am an excite.
Yeah. I love stop motion animation.
Gonna pick you up. Gonna go to the theater.
I'm gonna give you some black nail polish.
Pinocchio. Are you excited?
I am excited.
Are you excited, listeners?
Yeah. It better be.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for putting up with us for eight solid episodes of Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities.
And we'll be back for the next eight.
Yeah, we'll be back for the next eight. We'll be back with Pinocchio. Hang
loose. And then we're going to watch a comedy. Everyone.
Yeah, and then we're going to finally watch that Albert Brooks movie that we were supposed to watch before.
Yeah. That
Defending Your Life.
That made me laugh in the first 5 minutes and then didn't work anymore.
We got 5 minutes into it and had to stop because the stream didn't work. So we already know it's funny. So until next time, with Pinocchio, with Defending Your Life, I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And we'll see you when
it's Del Toro time. Netflix, if you cancel this show, I'm going to break your kneecaps.